It's me, Ellie Krug. How are you? It's good to see you. Welcome back to Ellie 2.0 Radio and Podcast, a show about idealism and idealists working to change the world for the better. And as usual, okay, we have a great show for you. The big interview is with Kelsey Waitz. She visited the show back in January of 22. And today she's back to talk about Stardust Farm, a delightful place she's creating for LGBTQ plus humans to find respite and peace. And as always, in the C block, I'll talk about my work as an idealist. And today I'm going to talk about the thing that just really made me the idealist, that is for sure. I'll talk about that in the C block. But here in the A block, I want to revisit an idealist that I talked about before. His name is Chef Jose Andres. And I'm sure if you've been paying attention to what's been going on in Gaza in the Middle East, you know his name. And you know his organization, which is the World Central Kitchen. I did talk originally about Chef Jose Andres because he was the featured idealist on this show back in episode 119. We're like talking more than 200 episodes ago, on April 20th of 2020. That was just as the pandemic was tightening its grip on the world. To recap, Chef Andres is the founder of World Central Kitchen, a hunger relief nonprofit that provides hot meals in conflict and natural disaster areas and zones across the world. The organization, World Central Kitchen, was founded in 2010 by Chef Andres. This was after he had already made this name for himself as a chef, opening world-famous restaurants, okay? And originally, World Central Kitchen started in 2010 in response to the earthquake in Haiti. Now, if you just want to Google World Central Kitchen, you will see the many places, including in the U.S., where World Central Kitchen operations were temporarily set up to feed humans in need and to prevent starvation. Thus, it was no surprise that World Central Kitchen began operations in Gaza, one of the most dangerous places in the world, a location of immense humanitarian need. Literally, as I speak to you, hundreds of thousands of Gazans are on the brink of famine today in, 2024. Now, Chef Andres, the idealist who founded World Central Kitchen, started out simply, as if that's the correct word, as a chef. But along the way, he allowed his heart to dream big. And thus, World Central Kitchen was born. To give you an idea of the importance of WCK, World Central Kitchen, in 2019, it raised $30 million. I mean, that's a lot of money for a nonprofit. A year later, as World Central Kitchen was setting up facilities in New York City and other locations due to the pandemic, World Central Kitchen raised $250 million. So it went literally more than $200 million in donations. It increased in the span of a year. But by 2022, after helping Ukrainians following the Russian invasion, the organization World Central Kitchens took in $519 million. This gives you an idea of how big this organization is and how important it's become. Now, I am speaking about World Central Kitchen because it attracts other idealists. Its work is difficult in very difficult circumstances. And the people who are involved with World Central Kitchen are idealists in the best sense of the word. And as I'm sure most of you know, on Monday, April 1, seven World Central Kitchen volunteers were killed, and that's the right word, murdered, by Israeli Defense Forces as they drove at night in Gaza. They had just completed escorting a shipment of food to a warehouse, and they were intact on the way back from the warehouse. Now, Chef Andres was asked to give an opinion about all this, and the New York Times published a guest essay by Chef Andres on April 3rd titled, Let People Eat. And this is by Jose Andres, and I'm going to read part of it for you. Quote, in the worst conditions you can imagine, after hurricanes, earthquakes, bombs, and gunfire, the best of humanity shows up, not once or twice, but always. The seven people killed on a World Central Kitchen mission in Gaza on Monday were the best of humanity. They are not faceless or nameless. They are not generic aid workers or collateral damage in war. Saftin Azam Ayad Abutha, John Chapman, Jacob Flinginger, Zomi Frankon, James Henderson, James Kirby, and Damian Sobel risked everything for the most fundamental human need, to share our food with others. These are people I served alongside in Ukraine, Turkey, Morocco, the Bahamas, Indonesia, Mexico, Gaza, and Israel. They are far more than heroes. Their work was based on the simple belief that food is a universal human right. I will read that to you again. Their work was based on the simple belief that food is a universal human right. It is not conditional on being good or bad, rich or poor, left or right. We do not ask what religion you belong to. We just ask how many meals you need. From day one, we have fed Israelis as well as Palestinians. Across Israel, we have served more than 1.75 million hot meals. We have fed families displaced by Hezbollah rockets in the north. We have fed grieving families from the south. We delivered meals to the hospitals where hostages were reunited with their families. We have called consistently, repeatedly, and passionately for the release of all the hostages. That's how we served more than 43 million meals in Gaza, preparing hot food in 68 community kitchens where Palestinians are feeding kitchens. We know Israelis. Israelis, in their heart of hearts, know that food is not a weapon of war. Israel is better than the way this war is being waged. It is better than blocking food and medicine to civilians. It is better than killing aid workers who had coordinated their movements with the Israeli Defense Forces. That was Chef Jose Andres in the New York Times on the 3rd of April, writing about his seven colleagues who were killed just this week. Now, I've got to tell you, if you can, remember the names of those who were killed. They were, as I said, in the very best sense of the word, idealists. They were trying to help humans. They were trying to keep babies from dying from starvation. And they were doing what idealists do, taking risks for other humans to try and make the world better, to try and make the plight of other humans better. Remember those seven. Remember World Central Kitchen. And remember the need to understand that food is a basic human right. Okay. All right. That's it for the A Block. I'm going to take a break now, and when we come back, we'll talk to Kelsey Waits about her wonderful concept of Stardust Farm. If you like what you hear, visit my website at elliekrug.com. Email me at ellijkrug@gmail.com. I'm trying my best with this show. I'll be back in a second. Thanks. Hey everyone, this is Ellie Krug with Ellie 2.0 Radio on AM 950. When I am not on the radio, my job is to go out and train and speak on diversity, equity, and inclusion topics. In America right now, that is a tough subject for many organizations. But I'm here to tell you, we need to do this work. I do the work well, and so please, contact me at Human Inspiration Works. You can email me or go through my website at elliekrug.com. I look forward to hearing from you. And we're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio. So read up about World Central Kitchen, as I suggested, and pay attention to what's going on with trying to get food into Gaza. I mean, it's just an incredibly, incredibly important and tense situation right now. But not tense, but still incredibly important, is today's, this week's featured, you know, big interview with Kelsey Waitz. Kelsey, welcome back to Ellie 2.0 Radio. How are you?
I am wonderful, and I'm so excited to be here with one of my favorite people in the whole world.
Oh, well, ditto back to you, girl. And so, everyone, Kelsey is the founder and executive director of Stardust Farm, which we're going to listen to or get some explanation about before. But we've also had Kelsey on the show before. She was on the show in January of 22, as I said earlier in the show. And I wanted to have her back because Kelsey and I have formed a friendship. Here you go, Ellie's. I'm doing my big interviews always with my friends because, Kelsey, last week I had two other friends on the show who, along with me, helped form Carver County Pride. But we're having you on today, and I wanted to have you back to talk about Stardust Farm, what it's about, how it came about, okay, because it's a wonderful, wonderful concept. So I'm going to give you the floor. Tell us, what is Stardust Farm, and how did you create it? And why?
Well, so I feel like we should start where we left off in January of 2022. You know, my family had just moved after my non-binary kiddo had been outed by members of our community. And I found myself in a funk, to say the least. More like pretty significant depression. By February, I had been diagnosed with PTSD from our experiences in Hastings, and it has been a slog of healing.
Kelsey, let me just interrupt you real quick, okay? Because we should probably flesh it out a little bit. You were living in Hastings. You ran for re-election as a school board member in Hastings. And in the course of your re-election bid in Hastings, one of your opponents or people supporting your opponents outed your non-binary child so much so, okay, that it created all kinds of hate coming your way. And then your family was the subject of a national CNN story that, you know, pretty much made Hastings look, you know, like a not a very welcoming place. But most importantly, the story highlighted how you were and continue to be an idealist and the stuff that was going on as a result of that. Do I have all of that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
I'm definitely an idealist. Yeah.
Okay, then go ahead and bring us forward.
Yeah.
I just needed to do that parenthetically. Okay.
Well, and so it was a struggle. And so the house we ended up buying, you know, the housing market was crazy and it was difficult to find a house. And the house we finally found, you know, is on acreage and the previous owners had left their chickens here. And I feel like this is important because this is how it all started, was with these chickens.
Did you know they were leaving the chickens?
They did let us know ahead of time that they would leave the chickens if we were interested. And we said, okay, three chickens, sure.
Three chickens.
I had no idea how these three chickens would change my life. I, as I said, serious depression, suffering from PTSD, and getting up to take care of the chickens every morning got me out of bed. And so slowly we rescued a whole bunch of rabbits. We've continued to rescue animals from people who have asked. And then we've also added alpacas because at this point, why not? you know what? And I love them. And for me, you know, my therapist would say working with animals is trying to help me trust people again. It's a way for me to have relationships and to build that having comfortable, you know, around others. And as we were adding to the farm, we were talking to people about our farm and we started hearing from members of the LGBTQ community. And they were saying, you know, we're obviously a queer couple. My kid really wants to visit a farm. We don't feel safe going to farms right now. Could we come to your farm and see the animals? Or I'm struggling with my mental health today. My kiddo continues to be misgendered, you know, by other members of the family. Can we just come and hold bunnies? And so
very
we started
important.
Getting these these requests from people, and we said, you know what, maybe this is a need. This is something we can give back to the world. And so we waited until I felt like I was in a place that I could open my safe area up to others. And now I think we've reached that place. And so Stardust Farm has been founded. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And we are kicking off in order to provide a care farming experience to members of the LGBTQ plus community.
So give us the numbers right now. I need to have an idea about the scope of the menagerie, okay, that you have.
Okay, I'm going to have to go through. So we have 4 dogs, 1 hamster, 3 rats, 20 chickens, 45 rabbits.
That's why I wanted.
Yeah, that's what gets people. And then 7 alpacas, 2 of whom are pregnant. So we'll have 9 alpacas by the end of the summer.
And you've birthed a number of alpaca babies already, right?
We have. We've had 2 babies born on the farm. We have Harvey Milk, who was born on Harvey Milk Day. And then we have Iris. And we picked Iris because the name means rainbow.
Oh, geez. How wonderful. And then with the alpacas, because they produce wool, and that's not probably, mm-hmm. is wool the right word for it?
Yeah.
Okay. So they produce wool. And so you've used alpaca wool as well. And will you tell the audience about that?
I have. So we are also a fiber farm. So about 20 of the rabbits that we rescued are Angora. So we also have Angora fiber and then alpaca fiber. And I do a lot of knitting and crochet. I'm learning how to spin this fiber into yarn and then learning weaving. And so these are classes that we'll be offering on the farm too. People can come meet the animals and then also use that wool and learn how to work with it. And then we're also hoping to offer summer camps for LGBTQ plus youth where they can also come and learn fiber art, animal caretaking, conservation, etc.
Yeah. And I mean, kids love summer camp and, you know, but a particular summer camp for queer kids is relatively rare and incredibly important because they don't have to worry about being misgendered. They don't have to worry about being bullied. You know, you're a wonderful, wonderful caretaker and, if I can say, mother figure, all right? And you just, I think it would be wonderful. Will you tell the audience in that regard about trying to get the summer camp program, you know, off the ground, tell the audience, will you, about your Kickstarter?
Right. So right now we have been having some classes inside my home, which is really difficult, one, for the family to always make sure that the house is clean and everything's taken care of and all that. And we're hoping to add an outdoor classroom. And really before we can offer summer camps, like if we want to offer a whole week-long summer camp, we really have to have an outdoor classroom. Because weather permitting, that would just be too difficult. And so we have a Kickstarter going right now where if we can raise $15,000, we'll be able to get an outdoor classroom. And then we can offer summer camps for LGBTQ plus youth. And if we don't, then if we don't manage to raise that money, then we will work on, you know, offering just more classes here and there, but not full days and such.
So can, first of all, give us how the audience can find Stardust Farm and then how they can find the Kickstarter.
Okay. So you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram. I will say I am personally much better about posting to Instagram because I have a lot of PTSD tied into Facebook. And so I hesitate on that platform, but we are on Facebook and you can look for Stardust Farm MN. And then on Instagram, it's also Stardust Farm MN. And our website is stardustfarmmn.org. And that has links to the Kickstarter. That has links if you just want to donate. It has links to learn all about the animals, including their names, birthdays, and everything.
Love it.
So.
Love it. And then the Kickstarter, they can find out about that how?
So there is on the website a really big banner to follow to get to the Kickstarter campaign if you want. You can also search Stardust Farm on Kickstarter and it should pop up.
Okay. And audience members, I would really urge you to think about contributing to Stardust Farm through the Kickstarter. I have contributed. So, and we've got, you still have a ways to go, right? To get to your 15,000.
Yep.
Okay.
We do.
So audience members, if you can think about it, I think that that would be great. What would really be great, would there be, you know, some angel out there that would like contribute like a good chunk towards the Kickstarter. If somebody was willing to do that, would you put their name on the pavilion, Kelsey?
Oh, yeah. And so the Kickstarter has all different levels. So if there are big donors, they can have their name on the welcome sign for the farm. We even have a reward where you can name one of the Kriyas. That the Kriya is a baby alpaca. You can name the alpaca, and then you will just have this super adorable alpaca that will be posted online and always be able to make you smile.
Yeah, yeah, legacy. All right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a fantastic idea, and it's an organization. I mean, it's a nonprofit that now essentially sort of fell into a little bit just simply by circumstance. But let's talk about the value of animals and how they literally can change a human, certainly their emotions. Talk to me a little bit more about that and maybe share an experience or two that you've seen with the people who have visited Stardust Farm.
There's a number of people who have come back multiple times just when they've had tough days. And what I keep hearing from them is the word healing, that they feel like the farm is healing, that they come here and they're welcomed and we talk and it doesn't have to be about everything that's going wrong. It's just about being with nature. And so alpacas are funny. They don't like to be snuggled. They you have to build trust with them. It takes time to build trust with them. One of our alpacas, for the first time after 6 months, she finally lets me wrap my arms around her now and really snuggle her. And that time I find very helpful for me because it means I need to relax when I'm with them, be calm, wait for them to come to me. And it really lets me kind of release that anxiety instead of being tense where they can sense it. It's just being calm with them, and the bunnies as well. Oh, the sensory, just feeling an Angora rabbit. Mm. I mean, it's like holding a fluffy cloud and it's calming. Mm. It's soothing. And they'll just sit there in your lap while you stroke their cheeks and rub their head. And, I have found both being with the animals and just the tactile sensation of working with their wool just very grounding with my own mental health.
Well, and as we particularly talk about, you know, queer kids, and you have firsthand experience with this, you know, talk to me a little bit about how the kids have reacted when they've come out. And What do you seek to accomplish with the day camp for the kids?
Absolutely. So we just had a family come out a few days ago, and their child was very quiet and just wanted to sit with the animals. Like that, all of the noises outside, all of people talking, that overwhelming as far as sensory goes. And so just being able to grab a bunny, and they ended up grabbing a bunny and going to a different room and just sitting down with the bunny and then switching out for a different bunny and just wanting to meet all of the bunnies, and that was a way for them to interact and feel calm without feeling overstimulated by having to talk to too many people, having to be incredibly active and have all of this going around. And you know, I've seen other kids come up, and it's really the bunnies. The bunnies are what I see the kids most gravitating towards when they just need that calm feeling, which makes sense. Bunnies are very quiet. And it really just is great to see how they came to the farm and then how they leave very happy. One family actually, you know, they left less than a week ago and they just texted me and said, well, we just rescued a dog. They didn't have pets, but they saw, you know, how their child had responded to the animals. And then they went home and had a talk about how do we bring, you know, that here. So I thought that was really great.
I mean, you're like a testing ground. I mean, well, you are. I mean, you know, let's see how our child does with an animal. And so let's pivot a little bit, okay? And let's talk about what's going on in America right now. You're the parent of a non-binary human and mm-hmm. who is preteen still, right?
11.
And, yep. Okay. And, you know, you've experienced you and your child, of course, have experienced marginalization in the schools and in the community. Mm-hmm. What, you know, and I mean, I don't want to trigger your PTSD, okay? So please understand that,
you
right?
Will.
And you know that I care yep. about you greatly and you are very dear to me. But how are you feeling right now about America? And, you know, I talk about this on the show quite a bit, but how are you as the parent, you know, of a queer kid, how are you feeling?
Scared. I think, you know, I have an 11-year-old, we're getting close to puberty, and I look at all of the restrictions going on across the country, preventing trans kids from accessing life-saving gender-affirming yeah. care. And I am worried. You know, we live in Minnesota, which is typically seen as a safe state for trans folks. But again, it also depends on where you're at in the state. There are very different experiences throughout. But even being in Minnesota, depending on federal law, Minnesota may not be able to protect our rights.
Yeah.
And so that is an ongoing discussion in our house. And what does that mean? And what are our choices? And what will we have to do? And frankly, we don't really know. I think that uncertainty is a bit scary. You know, I'm nervous. I don't want to be afraid. And so we talk to our kids about we're just going to continue living as though this isn't going to change anything. And we're going to keep working and doing what we can. We're going to be vocal advocates. We're going to work on changing hearts and minds, helping people understand what are the actual ramifications of this, talking about what is gender affirming care. And part of gender yeah. affirming care is just using the right name and pronouns. And so how do we change hearts and minds and also recognize that there may be some difficult decisions coming up that we don't know what that looks like. Just this past fall, actually, something I have not spoken about publicly, I haven't even made a post about it. My kiddo is now homeschooled. We experienced significant bullying in the schools that the administration was not addressing. And so we didn't have the fight. Typically, I would say, I want to fight it. I want
right.
to, you know, take them to town and do everything that we can. And after what had happened to us in the Hastings community, we just didn't have the fight in us. And so Kit is currently homeschooled, and we'll see what next year brings. But even in Minnesota, in this state yeah. that there are protections, there's still problems
yeah.
That still have a large impact on families. So
thank you for the vulnerability that you just showed. And I hear the fear, you know, and I mean, the irony is that Minnesota has become a refuge state. I mean, there are people moving from other states where gender-affirming care has been outlawed. And I just can't imagine, I mean, because I continue to get gender-affirming care in the form of hormones, I just can't imagine the federal government stepping in, which is a distinct possibility, of course, and then those refugees having to make a decision about leaving the country. Me having to make a decision about leaving the country, you making a decision about it. You know, it's just mind-boggling. It really is. But Kelsey, I also want you to know, okay, I have the greatest, greatest respect for you. And you are, notwithstanding the challenges that you've had, you've displayed great, great grace and courage. And you are a role model for other parents and for all, pretty much any human I know. You know, you really are. I mean, you have fought your way through all kinds of things. And here you are as an idealist doing a very idealistic thing about with the Stardust Farm. And I just want to say thank you. I want to compliment you and I want to thank you for hanging in there and not running away and continuing to lead. So.
Well, thank you. In my mind, I don't have the privilege to stop being an advocate. I think we know, you and I know, I think parents with trans kids, I think people who are trans, I think we understand that trans rights right now are the political focal point. That, you know, we've already seen candidates talking about that this is kind of the new way. Instead of talking about abortion, we're talking about trans rights, and it's scary, and I don't have time to stop advocating. I'm lucky in a way that people have listened to me, that I'm able to use my voice, and I feel like I need to take that privilege and use it to help others. And so that's what we continue to do, and I don't know what that will look like in the future. But I know for right now, I have to keep going. My kid needs me to keep going. And that's what I'm going to do.
Well, thank you. I mean, it just means the world to me. And I know it means the world to a whole lot of people. So, Kelsey, our time is up, all right? But I just wanted to thank you for coming back again to LE 2.0 Radio. And everyone, again, check out StardustFarmMN.org. That's the website. Go to the Kickstarter, do what Ellie Krug has done, contribute to the Kickstarter. If there is our angel, you know, Kickstarter person out there, step forward, will you? Okay. Or if listeners, if you know somebody who could be the angel, step forward, because it's an incredibly great idea about the day camp. And I just, Kelsey, I want it to succeed. And I know that it will, I know that Stardust Farm will succeed one way or another, regardless, because you're involved with it. But just good luck to you, okay?
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome. And we'll have you back again in some point to see how the farm is doing and then to see the number of alpacas that you'll have at that point.
Yeah. Yep.
And bunnies, we'll probably.
Yeah. No more bunnies.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, you've told me, you told me no more bunnies about 15... when it was 15 bunnies.
I know. And then people ask me to take their bunnies.
All right.
Problem.
All right. Well, listen,
okay.
Thanks again for being on LE 2.0 Radio. Listeners, we've been talking to Kelsey Waits, the founder and executive director of Stardust Farm. Go check it out. StardustFarmMN.org. And then when we come back, we'll do the C block talking about my work as an idealist. And I will have a clip to play that will make you cry. And just be warned, trigger warning, okay? All right, you're listening to me, Ellie Krug, with LE 2.0 Radio. When we come back, if you like what you hear, go visit my website at elliekrug.com. We'll be back in a second. I look to you when I see nothing. And we're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio. Kelsey Waits. You got to love her. I mean, just, you know, profiles in courage and strength. Because what she and her family endured in Hastings with the marginalization was unbelievable. And here she is, bouncing back, trying to help other humans. What an idealist. And now we're in my C block. I get to talk about my work as an idealist. So I've got a number of things coming up. So let me share those. And then I'm going to share you something that's going to make me cry. Okay. And it may make you cry. But first, let me talk about what's coming up with Illy Krug. Okay. So as you heard last week, next Saturday, a week from today, I'm going to be speaking at the Delano High School. I'm going to be doing the first two modules of Gray Area Thinking. Their Gay Straight Alliance got a grant, and they're going to have me come out. They're going to have a queer choir come out to Delano, and they have this event that evening. It's open to the public. Please come. It's going to be starting at 7 o'clock. I believe it's in the Delano High School gym. All you have to do, I think, is Google Illy Krug Delano, and you're going to be able to find out about the event because there have been a couple of newspaper stories about it in Delano. So I'd love to see you. Come on out. Then secondly, tomorrow, all right, or if you're hearing this on Sunday, tonight, okay, on Sunday, which would be the 7th, all right, the Crown of Glory Lutheran Church in Chaska is hosting a potluck at 5 o'clock. This sounds so Minnesotan, right? And then a book discussion from 6 to 7:30 about my book. And so I will be there. I will be having potluck with people. So you can come and just talk to me like a human, and then we're going to talk about my book. I'll also be selling some books there, so if you have any interest in that. Then lastly, you know I am a huge supporter of Minnesota Women's Press, and we've had Mickey Morissette, the publisher, editor of Minnesota Women's Press, on the show at least a couple of times. And they have this, they've been trying to do greater work in greater Minnesota, which is all right up my alley. And they have this event coming up on next Saturday, the 13th, from noon to 4 o'clock, called the Badass Women event, where there's going to be all kinds of communication and discussion around various events involving public safety, which would include gender-based violence, trying to avoid it, diversity in politics, where I'm involved with that, collective health. There's going to be some performances by various artists. And then there are going to be the first annual Badass Minnesotan Awards, which I think I'm getting one of those awards. So at any rate, but you've got to join Minnesota Women Press. You've got to be a member of the badass community. Okay. And to do that, to join, you got to go to womenpress.com, be a badass. And I'd love to see you there. And if you come, say hello to me. All right. Now for the clip that I'm going to share with you. We are just past 56 years of Dr. King's assassination on April 4th, 1968. I was an 11-year-old kid at the time. I heard about his murder watching Batman, the interrupted Batman. I had my pajamas on. And I remember they interrupted it, and then they went immediately to Indianapolis, where Bobby Kennedy, who at the time was campaigning to be president, Bobby Kennedy was set to speak in Indianapolis to do a campaign rally. And they went, like live TV, to Indianapolis to hear what Bobby Kennedy had to say about Dr. King's murder. You can hear me already getting choked up. And so I'm going to play the clip in the entirety, and you're going to hear for the first 30 seconds, all you're going to do is hear a crowd because they think they're there for a campaign event. And then you're going to hear Bobby hush them, and then you're going to hear what he has to say. And then I'll catch you on the other end. Okay, thanks, Brett. Go ahead.
Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization, black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. Dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
Well, you just heard, I heard as an 11-year-old, and I am sure that that's what cemented me as an idealist. I don't think I was ever the same after that. And can you imagine a politician today using words like love and compassion? Can you imagine? how far we have fallen. Okay, that's the show. Big thanks to my producer, Brett, because he had to do a little bit of muscling. And to you, my listeners, I hope you have appreciated this. If you like what you hear, tell others about this show. Share about it, will you? And do me a favor, between now and when you hear my voice next, will you go out and do something? Something around love and compassion. Something to make the world better. Will you do that for me, please? Ellie Krug, over and out.